afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly time together. Last week, the equipment which records for future delectation of all of Captain Joe's people all over the world failed, and therefore the broadcast last week is never going to appear on the archives. And so for that reason, I am going to repeat a couple of the things that I talked about, because I know that they are of great interest and concern to all of you. Greetings to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. And in particular, do I send greetings today to all of Captain Joe's people in the wonderful state of Michigan. Michigan, which is where I was the captain in Sault Ste. Marie. And I have with me today two of my friends of family rank who are part of my Sault Ste. Marie family. They are being maidenly reluctant to say anything, but they are sitting right across from me. And so to Janet, who is also often my duty driver, I do get to have a duty driver every so often in life, even today. And Kevin sitting right across from me in the seat where normally I would have somebody if I were doing a detailed and in-depth interview. We'll see whether they will be willing to come on. But in the meantime, we're going to carry on with the program, because one of the things that I should have done last week and did not was to deliver birthday greetings to a number of people, and all of you out there who have had birthdays in the last week know who you are, but happy birthday from the captain, and in particular to my academy classmate who sent me a signal and he proclaimed that he had just ascended to the mighty heights of 9 decades of life. I'm not there yet. Next month, of course, is my birthday, and we'll have a parade right down here on Vashon Highway Southwest with elephants and giraffes and a marching band. But I'm not going to disclose the number of years which I claim, but for my classmate, Captain Brown, Commander Brown, 90 years, well done. The medical list continues to get better in that we've not had anybody leave the medical list for unapproved reasons, which is to cross the bar. And a reminder that I was finally able to make an appointment to get my next COVID shot and also the respiratory infection shot. That is coming up in a few days. I had to make an appointment to do that here on the magical isle of Vashon. It is my wish, my hope, and my command that all of Captain Joe's people will indeed go and get all of those inoculations. And if you haven't had the one for shingles, or if you haven't had the one for pneumonia, or God only knows whatever else there is out there, get in the queue for it and get it done, because that is how we are going to keep on carrying out our duties and not going on to the binnacle list. A couple of things have happened during the week. I'm going to capture those right now. We've talked a number of times on this broadcast about my concerns about what is happening down in the South China Sea, and in particular the confrontations among the Chinese, the PRC, People's Republic of China Coast Guard, the Philippine Coast Guard, and our own and much-loved American Coast Guard, which is also has a presence in that area. A few days ago, there was indeed a collision, not a very serious one. It was more sort of a kissing sides kind of collision. In my taking a look at the film clips of it, it appeared to me as if the Chinese Coast Guard ship had, and you notice that I do not call them cutters. The word cutter for a Coast Guard cutter belongs exclusively to us in the U.S. Coast Guard, because the type of vessel that we started out with in 1790 was a cutter, a type of sailing vessel. Coast Guard ship, P People's Republic of China Coast Guard ship. Looking at the film clip of the collision, it appears to me as if she set herself up into an overtaking situation where she was overtaking the vessel belonging to the Philippine Coast Guard. In an overtaking situation, the vessel doing the overtaking has to give way to the vessel being overtaken. And so it does appear to me as if there was a rules of the road violation by the People's Republic of China. My own solution to this whole problem there is to get the politicians out of it. And for all of the captains of all of the Coast Guard ships of the various Coast Guards that are working there, where we now have three and there probably will be more, all of them with the slash, the racing stripe up on the bow, something else that the U.S. Coast Guard started a number of years ago, that these captains all get together, and they get together in the captain's cabin of the senior commanding officer, the senior captain. And they agree among themselves that they're going to exhibit only good seamanship, and they're not going to crowd each other, and they're not going to behave as a bunch of bonzos and yahoos, but they're going to behave as the proper and seamanlike captains that they all should be. And having come to that agreement, whatever activities they take disputed islands would not involve any threats to the ships which are on station out there. One of the reasons that the People's Republic of China Coast Guard is there is to try to prevent the Philippine Coast Guard and a resupply ship that belongs to the Filipino government to resupply an old LST that they have grounded on the island there to provide a sovereignty presence. And periodically they go out. There's a crew that's on this old LST, and periodically they go out and resupply it. And the PRC Coast Guard is trying to inhibit that. They get out in front of the resupply vessel, and that was a little bit of pushing and shoving, and that's how this non-lethal collision took place. It's time for all of that to end. If we're going to have a presence out there, it should be one of mutual respect, admiration, and cooperation. And in particular, because the PRC has a very large fishing fleet operating in that area, to be there for mutual assistance for any of the crews on those fishing vessels. I have considerable experience doing fisheries enforcement work, in particular up on the Grand Banks south of Cape Sable, and in particular with the Russians. And in a particular period of a week or 2 weeks, there's always somebody that gets hurt. Working around fishing gear is dangerous work, and there's always somebody that slashes themselves open, and that's when they need to have a rescue vessel there to save life. That is what the business of the various Coast Guards should be, and that's my solution to that problem. Get the politicians out of it and let the sailors deal with it. The other thing that's happened during the week is that the workers who are employed by the Canadian St. Lawrence Seaway Corporation, which is the organization that operates the St. Lawrence Seaway in the Canadian side, workers have gone on strike. And that means that the locks which lead to Montreal are closed, and that means that there's no traffic moving through the St. Lawrence Seaway until they settle this particular labor dispute. So it is my hope and my wish, and insofar as I could, if I could command it at this point, that they would go back to the bargaining table and that they would get this sorted out so that we can keep traffic moving through the St. Lawrence Seaway. Everybody remembers that the seaway closes down during the winter when it becomes really difficult, when ice clogs everything up and the seaway closes. The lakes close, essentially. The Great Lakes close on both sides. And when I took my Northwind a number of years ago up into the Great Lakes, I was the last upbound. And as I went through each one of the locks going into the Great Lakes in the Seaway system, the lockmaster, that is the title of the person who is in charge of a particular set of locks, the lockmaster would drop the gate down behind me and he said, "Captain, we will see you in the spring," and gave me the Great Lakes salute. The short version of the Great Lakes salute is one long and two shorts. The long version, which is theoretically authorized only by captains themselves to sound, is two longs and three shorts. Anyway, I would get the Great Lakes salute, and what I did not know was that spring would not come the next year until May. And I paid my dues to go through the locks by crushing all the ice inside the lock chamber and then locking all of that down. That's how we opened up the Seaway that particular spring. So when the Seaway is closed during the shipping season, nothing moves back and forth. And right now there are something like 125, 130 ships that are at anchor someplace in the system waiting for the ability to transit. So let's get this labor issue settled so that we can start moving traffic again through the St. Lawrence Seaway. And the third thing that came to me during the week, we talked about this in 2021. The Maersk Eindhoven, a vessel that is able to carry over 13,000 20-foot containers. Very, very large ship. She got into a storm off of the north of Japan. She got into a bad storm and she lost power. She was rolling very badly and she threw some containers into the sea. About 250, 260 containers went in. And the containers were, of course, never recovered. They all sank. Well, now the Maersk company has been sued by the insurance company that is insuring the Target Corporation. Target lost 57 containers. What could have been in those containers? What would be coming across in Target from China? Well, just about everything. Just about everything. Clothing. Anyway, Target has said, well, we can't get our containers back, but we want to be financially compensated. And so there's a suit now being brought against the Maersk line and the ship in particular, the Maersk Eindhoven. And she is, they probably will end up, her insurers probably will end up paying for at least those 57 containers. But one is led to wonder who had stuff in the other 200. And will they be levying a suit against Maersk as well? Maersk comes into the port of Seattle, does not go any longer into the port of Tacoma. Yesterday, when we were doing some tourists driving around, we saw one of the big Maersk ships in the port of Seattle. They all have that typical Maersk paint scheme, that kind of blue, green-blue paint scheme. And we get very large ones here in the port of Seattle. They carry huge amounts of cargo coming into the United States, most of it from China. If you are wearing any piece of clothing or if you have any shoes on your feet or if you are using a telephone, you probably came in one of those containers. In reading the Navy Times, here's a little bit of something added on to the South China Sea conflict. Under the terms of a 1951 mutual defense treaty between the United States and the Philippines, we are obligated to protect them if a conflict arises. So if there is an escalation of the tension down in the South China Sea around these Spratly Islands, then we may find ourselves drawn into in a much more intense way. All the more reason why I'm hoping that my plan of getting the politicians out and letting the ship captains work it out is taken on. A number of years ago, we had a very bad situation where World War II ducks, amphibious vehicles, were sank, and the passengers drowned. And over the years, and these happened on, in particular, on a couple of lakes, where the lakes go across state boundaries, which give the Coast Guard jurisdiction. Those are navigable waters of the United States. And so in those particular case, one of them goes all the way back to 1999. And only now are there regulations being issued to provide safety regulations and safety precautions for these particular vehicles. My own opinion is that it is time for them to be retired and to not use them any longer for carrying passengers for hire. They just they have little tiny bilge pumps. When they start taking on water, the bilge pumps can't keep up with it. They fill up with water, they sink, and people die. So in any case, the Coast Guard has now issued regulations about that. I am urging everyone to not be enthusiastic about taking duck rides. I will not take any people that I care about, that I love, on them myself. And there you have that, and that's what I have to say about all of that. The Commandant of the Coast Guard has, just in the last few days, has appeared before a group of people and in a Naval Institute-sponsored seminar. And she has come up with a statement. She said that in fiscal year 2023, which has officially just ended, that the Coast Guard was short about 3,500 sailors, 3,500 people that should have gone through boot camp at Cape May, entry-level people just starting out. That's about 10% of the enlisted force of the Coast Guard. Altogether, right now on active duty, there are about 46, 47,000 of us. When you subtract the number of people in the officer corps, that's about 10%. That's a lot. And she's also gone to an analysis of not only why this happened, but also what is going to be done about it. I am gobsmacked at what some of the things are that she is talking about doing. I had never heard of a program or an outlet called Twitch. Twitch apparently is some sort of a gaming program. And so the Coast Guard now is going to put some material on Twitch in an effort to entice young people to come into the Coast Guard. Something else we're doing is we're going to put Starlink, apparently, on all of our ships so everybody can keep on being in touch with home base. Well, Commandant Fagan, coming to you from the captain, from this captain up in the captain's chair, with a lot of command experience with young sailors. I don't need any Twitch sailors. I don't need Starlink. What I need are young people who are ready to learn their profession. They are ready to learn how to be sailors. They are ready to learn how to be proper seamen, to hand, reef, and steer in the old term. And I am indeed going to take every crew that I have, and I took every crew that I had in all six ships, into what we now call over and over again in harm's way. Because that's the nature of going to sea. The nature of going to sea is that it is a dangerous way to make a living. It is a dangerous thing to do. And we make it less dangerous by training and by taking the hard things. Hell, I'm ready to have hammocks put back in. I'm ready to put hammocks back in our ships and have sailors sling their hammocks. I don't think I'm going to get very far from far with that one. But the point here is that instead of making all of these things as if everybody is still at home and they have their phones and they have their video games, that we emphasize and we train for the part of it that is hard and the part of it that is dangerous, because the sea is the same as it is is the same now as it has been since the creation, whatever creation story you particularly subscribe to. The sea is exactly the same. It's just as dangerous, it's just as benign, and it is just as dangerous as it has always been. So I read an article. This one came to me from another one of my great outlets, Navy Times, I think. And it said that there is a lot of complaining coming from the Navy fleet because they're not getting enough sleep. And the reason they're not getting enough sleep is that it is noisy or because it is rough. My approach to this was, when I was in command, and would be now if I still were in command, and if I have anybody who is listening to me who has any influence over this, is that we train for the more difficult, not the less. That we don't need to have individual staterooms for E3 sailors. Three or four high bunks work just fine. We feed the crews well. I know that because I have been responsible for that. I know that we feed the crews well, and we feed whenever is necessary. In icebreakers, you feed 24 hours a day. But you train for the worst times so that we're all going to stay alive. And we train for the times when the sea is not going to be amenable to my picking up my Starlink, whatever Starlink is, however it works, and talking to mom at home. So there you have it, Commandant Fagan. It's time to emphasize basics. It's time to leave commanding officers, to leave captains alone and let them run their ships. It's time to cut some of the traffic back and forth between the shore and the ships. And that is what I have to say about all of that. We're coming up on soon we will have the holiday time. In my Christmas broadcast, I always tell the story of getting my Christmas tree in Wellington, New Zealand. And I will be doing that again this year. And I will also have maybe one or two news stories, because there is an endless supply. But before we get to my departure, remarks, a couple of other pieces that I've just seen some notes for. We've talked before, and I have a number of people, Captain Joe's people, who we're going to see in the tugboat business. One of my friends here on the island is a retired captain with Crowley Red Stack, known as Crowley Red Stack because all of the Crowley tugs had a red stack. Nowadays, tugs don't have stacks. Many of them don't have stacks. It's still called Crowley Red Stack, at least by this captain. So they're getting now into more and more into the wind farm business. We've talked a little bit about wind farms. We've talked a little bit about the downsides of them and when they get planted in places where they interfere with fishing, then there's a great deal of resistance. And we're going to find more and more of that happening off of the coast of the United States because there are some big, very, very large wind farms being planned in off of the coast of New England and off of the coast of New Jersey. So Crowley Red Stack is getting into the business of supporting these huge turbine arrays. And they have gone to the port of Eureka, California. Lots of Captain Joe's people have served in that part of the world. That is Northern California and Southern Oregon and those ports, those small ports and those river inlets that have those terrible bars. And Eureka is one of them, and Crowley Red Stack has taken over a big part, and they are rebuilding a new port in Eureka, California, where they are going to be home ported to support the wind farm business outside off of the coast on the West Coast side. So we can see a lot more activity in that particular area. We're going to see a lot more resistance to it, especially from people in the fishing industry. And on the West Coast, be not surprised if those who are concerned about the safety and protection of whales get involved in this as well. It remains to be seen whether the whales, which are pretty smart, most of them, they're mammals, of course, like we are, whether they are smart enough to not get themselves entangled in the underpinnings of these enormous wind turbine arrays. But be not surprised if I come back and report that now we're getting some resistance on the part of the people who are so concerned about the welfare of whales. And I will, of course, keep up with all of that. My last thing has to do with chief petty officers. I get 30 seconds on this one. Has to do with chief petty officers. All of Captain Joe's people who are Coast Guard people know that I was raised by chief petty officers as a very young captain. I have nothing but the greatest respect and admiration for them, and I talk that up frequently. So the Master Chief of the Navy came out with a statement of what he wanted to do as the newly enfranchised Master Chief of the Navy, and this statement went on for 3 pages. So, Master Chief, here it comes to you from the captain, from this captain who's been around chief petty officers my whole life. Stick to the chief's creed. It only is a few words. It gets right to the heart and to the soul of what being a chief petty officer is all about. Don't need to get into lots of leadership theory or anything like that. Keep it simple. It's just like, let's go back to hammocks. So this is your Captain Joe. We've come to the end of our time together for this particular half hour. It is, as always, I am on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And I will meet with you right here in 1 week from today.